Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Emerger Working Group Teleseminar. Now, at this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode. If you should require offline assistance, you may press star then zero. As a reminder, today's call is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Toshiko. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Toshiko Igarashi from the Japan Fair Trade Commission. On behalf of Emerger Working Group co-chairs, JFTC, CMA, and the Spanish CNMC, and the project leader, USFTC, I would like to welcome you to the Emerger Working Group's first seminar on digital mergers. As digital economy is a hot topic for both the ICN and the Emerger Working Group, today we invited speakers from agencies that have published expert reports on the digital economy and asked them to introduce aspects of digital mergers of the reports as well as their experiences. First of all, I would like to introduce today's distinguished moderator, Professor Douglas Murmett. He's a professor of practice of law at the Stanford Law School, and before moving to academia, he had illustrious careers in antitrust and technology, such as acting assistant attorney general of the antitrust division of the U.S. Department of Justice, partner of the global law firm, and senior vice president of the general counsel of Intel Corporation. We are very honored to have him to moderate interactive discussion after speakers' presentations. Let's turn the mic to Professor Murmett to start the seminar. Professor Murmett, please.
Thank you, Kishido. This should be a very interesting panel discussion, I believe, and today, because not only do we have terrific speakers, but of course the topic is timely and important. Let me first introduce the speakers. There are four of them. They'll be speaking in a sense in three groups, as will be clear in a moment. The first is Eleonora Uccello. Eleonora is a case handler at DG Comp in the unit dealing with mergers in the IT, telecoms, and media sectors. And she's dealt with several mobile telecom mergers in the sector, such as Facebook, WhatsApp, Microsoft, LinkedIn, and Apple Shazam. Mark Sedler, also from DG Comp, is also a case handler there in the merger policy and support case support unit. And prior to joining DG Comp, he was in private practice for several years. Third is Richard Romney of the CMA in the UK. He joined the Competition and Markets Authority as a director of mergers and is responsible for leading Phase 1 merger review. He, too, practiced law at Freshfields, where he was a competition lawyer for over 8 years. And the fourth speaker is Morag Bond from the Australian Competition and Common Consumer Commission. She is involved in the branch that was created following the digital platforms inquiry to focus on digital platforms, naturally. She's general manager of that digital platforms branch. Prior to joining the ACCC, Morag was practiced law both in Australia and in New Zealand. So here's how we're going to proceed today. First, we're going to have presentations, three presentations from the jurisdictions represented by our distinguished speakers. And then after that, we will take questions. I will ask questions of the panel. They may ask questions or comment on their presentations. If anyone on this call would like to ask a question, I would prefer that you send me the question in an email, dmelamed@law.stanford.edu, and Melamed, by the way, is spelled M-E-L-A-M-E-D, dmelamed@law.stanford.edu, and then I will organize the questions and ask them of the speakers. If we have time at the end, after the questions that I've received have been asked, we may turn it open to questions over the phone from the listeners. So let me turn it over now to Eleanor and Mark to begin the presentations.
Thank you, Douglas. This is Mark speaking. I'll start our presentation just to give you an idea of what we'll be talking about. If we can move to the next slide. We have a slightly longer presentation here on the slides, and we are not going to go through all of these slides in detail. So We'll focus on some abstract topics, in particular about the market definition in digital markets and the substantive assessment. And then we'll move into two case studies, Microsoft LinkedIn and Apple Shazam, before speaking about the report of earlier this year's, the special advisor report about the digital issues in competition policies, and then moving on to a conclusion. With that, I'll jump immediately to slide number 9 in the way they are counted here, market definition in digital markets. Now, first of all, it's important to realize that digital markets can be extremely different, but one feature we often see in digital market is that you have something very specific to them that you do not see that often in other markets, and these are zero-price markets. Now, zero-price markets pose particular difficulties in assessing them and in defining them. Now, first of all, you could wonder whether a zero-price market is a market at all. There, at least at the level of the European Union, we have a clear case law that says even services provided free of charge are subject to competition law. The more practical question is, how do you define a market that is not characterized by price? Often a test typically used is a SNP test, the small but significant non-transitory increase in price, that for obvious reasons doesn't work if you start with a price that is zero. If you wonder how would customers react if you increase the price by 5 to 10%, but the starting price is zero, you will not get a meaningful reply. It doesn't really work to say, well, you might wonder whether what would happen if you would increase the price from 0 to 1 euro, because there is a significant difference that is more than a 5 to 10 price increase. Some therefore suggested, and not in a merger case, but in an antitrust case, the Commission has used a similar test that cannot be spoken out in its abbreviated form as easily as SNP. That would be a test, a small but significant non-transitory decrease in quality. But there again, you'll see a lot of or encounter a lot of difficulties, because what is a small but significant decrease in quality with a certain price percentage? It's much more obvious. For these reasons, in many digital markets, you will have to refer rather to qualitative criteria, and these are in particular characteristics or the intended use. A case where the Commission encountered this problem was the merger between Facebook and WhatsApp, where we had to decide whether these two services are within the same market. And ultimately, based on qualitative criteria like the richness of the social experience, the speed of communication, the Commission decided that these are not in the same market. Now, moving on to questions of the substantive assessment, please advance 2 slides to market shares. Typically, in our competitive assessment, market shares are basically the starting point of our competitive assessment. But again, not in all digital markets, but in particular in zero-price markets, market shares are can be much more difficult to define. For one, obviously, you do not have reliable market shares on revenues, because the revenues for all participants, if they offer their prices for zero, will be zero. Market shares on volume can also be much more difficult compared to, let's take steel production, for example. There you can look at the output in tons, but what is the volume of the transaction or of the market in digital markets. Now, there, in our experience, you have to look at this on a very case-specific basis and can look at different criteria, like the number of transactions, the number of downloads, the number of active users. But even then, you encounter specific problems. In particular, take, for example, the number of active users. You might have to take into account that users can use different digital apps at the same time, and then you might end up with market shares above 100% if you simply add all the number of users using a certain app. With that, going on to the next slide, the role of data. That is a particular difficulty or characteristic of digital markets. Data often is at the very core of the business of companies active in digital markets, and has therefore often been coined as the new oil of the digital economy. In our experience, you can basically look into data from two sides. One is roughly similar to a horizontal assessment, the aggregation of data sets and the strengthening of market power by such aggregation. And the other point of view would be whether you, similar to vertical mergers, whether you are able to foreclose competitors with the access to certain data sets. So these are the roughly speaking the two scenarios in which data can be relevant for the competitive assessment. And we'll explain this, or an example of how we assess this in more detail when we are discussing the Apple Shazam case. Now, the next slide, please. There we present how a merger can affect a market. In general, under our legal framework, we look at five different criteria how mergers can affect competition, and that's price, output, quality, choice, and innovation. In zero price markets, obviously, in theory, you could have a price effect if the merged entity would decide to increase prices or start charging prices. But more often, we focused on the qualitative aspect. And quality, in our view, can include very different aspects like speed of services, the speed of innovation, or even the level of data protection. So in our view, data protection in itself is not a relevant criteria for the competitive assessment, but can be part of a qualitative criteria, and therefore a deterioration in quality can be considered as present if the data protection deteriorates. Now, with this general overview, I'm giving over the speaker to Eleonora.
Good morning or good evening to everyone. I will now indeed present some facts related to two cases where these elements presented in general by Mark have been of relevance, and where we have developed our framework for the analysis of these issues. So if you could go at slide 15. Here you have a couple of slides from 15 to 17, which set a bit the scene about this case and present a bit the parties, Microsoft and LinkedIn, in the first case I will talk about. I will not go into the details of this. I guess that Microsoft and LinkedIn are known, and I will go straight to the an important theory that we have assessed at slide 18. So if you can go to slide 18, thanks. So the purpose of this slide is to present you how when we are in a situation where there are two parties which maintain the data set, how we assess the so-called big data issue, so how we assess the aggregation of data sets. In this case, Microsoft and LinkedIn were both active in the market for online advertising, and they were maintaining databases of data that you were using for the purpose of advertising. So the question that we put to ourselves to assess this issue was, first of all, whether the data were sold by either of the parties, by both the parties on the market. If the data were to be sold on the market, we would have done a traditional horizontal analysis, treated data as a normal product. In this case, parties were not selling data to third parties, so we didn't follow this route. The parties were keeping their data captive, and they were using those for their online advertising activities. So what we did in this scenario was to assess whether the two databases could have been combined. And in making this analysis, we took into consideration technical but also regulatory or contractual situations. So for example, in Europe, the data protection regulation puts certain limits to when and how data can be combined and processed together. There could be contractual restrictions if the parties have acquired the data through, for example, the customers, if they were to offer advertising services through intermediation on the website of a third party. So we assessed this. If there are no restrictions to the possibility of combining the data, the way we would assess the potential merger would be the one to whether the aggregation of the data could increase the advantage of the merged entity in the market where these data are available, so by increasing their market power or raising a barrier to entry for competitors. If instead we were to find that there was it was not possible to combine the databases, we would fall, into the analysis of the potential competition that the parties exerted to each other in the downstream market where the data is relevant. So in this case, it would have been the online advertising. In this specific case, we assessed both, scenario where the data can be combined or not, and concluded that there were not to be any issue because in any event, competitors would have had other databases available for advertising purposes and there are other strong competitors, such as, for example, Google. Then in the next slide, there is another series of ARM which assessed in the Microsoft LinkedIn case. Slide 19, please. So if we can go to the next slide, please. Whilst they are trying to change the slide, I will start explaining you a bit these theories of ARM that we have analyzed, which relate to the possible foreclosure of the possible foreclosure of rivals of LinkedIn. So the theory of ARM was premised, first of all, on the observation that in Europe, LinkedIn was not, as in other parts of the world, probably the only strong professional social network available to consumers, but there were also others, and especially this was the case in Germany, where there was a strong competitor, Xing. So what we assessed was whether after the combination of Microsoft and LinkedIn, Microsoft could have engaged in certain conducts that could have excluded from the market competitors of LinkedIn. And why was that? At the point in time where we were analyzing this merger, registration, so first subscription by users to professional social networks was done on PC and laptop and not on mobile devices. Microsoft has a very strong market position in PC for operating system for PC and also productivity software. And what we assessed was whether by pre-installing a LinkedIn app on the operating system that he was selling, or by introducing a LinkedIn feature in the productivity software such as Word that Microsoft was selling, he could have not increased the visibility of LinkedIn, provided a greater advantage in first entry of users on the LinkedIn platform, and so marginalize competitors. And we found that this conduct could have had an effect not only in choice in general terms, but also in particular in terms of a possible decrease on privacy competition. So a quality aspect where professional social network in Europe and especially in Germany were highly competing, which was in providing a level of privacy or data protection higher than what's strictly required by the law. And if LinkedIn competitors would have been driven out of the market, this dimension of competition would have been eliminated. So the various steps of the theory of harm are in the slide. I will just briefly mention now in the next slide which remedy we obtain for these theory of harm, which is essentially a combination of behavioral remedies aimed at preserving the ability of competitors of LinkedIn to compete as pre-merger. The important element that I would like to stress is the one related to the duration of this remedy. Indeed, I mentioned that our theory of harm was premised on the fact that PC still constitutes an important entry point for the professional social network market at that point in time when we made the analysis, but we saw the trends were such that mobiles were going to take over and becoming the platform where users register more for professional social networks. So we wanted to have a remedy which would have take care of possible negative effects of the merger in the interim period while we saw this dynamic trend to come. And this would conclude my presentation of two important elements of the Microsoft LinkedIn transaction. And now I would go and talk about the Apple Shazam mergers that we cleared last year in after an in-depth investigation. So in the next two slides, you have again a few, let's say, details about the case that I leave for your reading offline. I would instead now go to slide 25. Apple is very well known. Shazam, maybe it's not known, but it's a provider of a music recognition software, which allows basically to recognize songs. And this is a product that could be considered complementary to a certain extent to the other products in the music space, such as, for example, music streaming apps, like the one offered by Apple. Apple Music. So what we assessed in this case was whether by combining the two apps, so Shazam and Apple Music, Apple would have acquired an advantage in the market for music streaming. And in particular, we looked at whether this could have been the case as a result of the combination of the data collected by the two companies. And this because data, in particular in the music streaming industry, it's very important because it allows to improve the experience of the users and companies, which more or less have all the same catalog of music records that they offer to the user, compete on the extra feature. And this is actually what determined the success of this new industry, music streaming, in a sector where there was a lot of piracy in the past. So in the next slide, there is a bit of the gist of our theories of harm, which was whether via the acquisition of Shazam, Apple could have access to the user data that could have been so good that his products would have improved a lot, and by shutting out competitors, they would have been marginalized. So we assess these theories of harm under the usual framework, at least under our framework of assessment of ability, incentives, and effects. I think that the important point that I would like to bring to your attention is, even assuming there was ability incentive, we consider that there would have not been effect on the basis of an analysis of the data that Apple would have acquired. And in the next slide, there is the methodology that we have used, which compared to other, let's say, cases, even the same Microsoft LinkedIn, we try to enter a bit more in deep into this and try to compare the database available to competitors to Shazam using the four metrics which are used also in the business to benchmark databases, which is variety, velocity, volume, and value. Variety being the different type of data in a database, velocity, the speed at which data databases are updated, volume, the size of the database, and value, the economic importance of it. So while this is, let's say, theoretically maybe it's been heard a lot already, there's been a French-German study which was already a few years ago, which was already putting this as a relevant methodology, the issue was which metric to be used. And here we've made some effort, and I think the data that you see in the slide are very case-specific because of the type of service that we were considering, but based on careful examination of the market and using these four dimensions, we concluded that the data of Shazam were not unique or so important, and so there would have been no harm as a result of the transaction. And now I hand over to Mark.
Thank you. I'll finish this presentation with a short presentation of the report that you find in one slide more in advance. So the commission and the commissioner charged three experts, competition experts, not within DGCOM, three independent competition experts with this report, a competition policy for the digital era. And the report was presented early this year. Just to give you the highlights, in general, the special advisors, the independent expert, found that generally the competition law is fit for purpose in the digital era. We have questioned whether we need to review of our turnover-based jurisdictional thresholds. There, they found it too early to take any final view. As to the substantive assessment, they were focusing very much on the acquisitions by dominant platforms, ecosystems, of smaller players outside of their core areas. And we're arguing that while under traditional point of view, this looks as if there would be no overlaps and therefore unproblematic, they suggest something rather like looking into what they call technological space or user space, basically broadening a bit from a market point perspective to a broader view, the view you are looking into this, and assessing an increase in market power, not in the market, but in this technological space. They argue that the current framework for conglomerate mergers, what you have if you are buying someone in an unrelated market, is not really fit for purpose to these acquisitions in the digital era, and should therefore be handled rather as if it would be a horizontal assessment. So this is, I think, the most important element. They also suggest some thoughts how this could further be strengthened, the review of these transactions, and for example suggest that you could shift the burden of proof, but just to be clear, only in case of dominant platforms acquiring other smaller players in neighboring markets. So no overall shift of the burden of proof in mergers in general. And with that, if you could advance two more slides, just some final words. In our experience so far in digital murders, you really have to do a case-by-case assessment because the nature of the markets involved can be very different. Digital markets tend to be extremely fast-moving, and therefore even more so than in other cases, you need a very dynamic analysis, a forward-looking analysis, which might be particularly difficult because they are fast-moving. You have a greater focus on non-price effects and particular quality. We spoke about it, or innovation. And I think it is fair to say that the report we have from the special advisors is rather the starting point than the end of a process we'll go through in order to continue considering how to tackle the challenges of mergers in digital markets that will certainly become more frequent in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark and Eleanor, for that interesting and comprehensive report. I have a couple of questions, but I'm going to defer them for now and turn it over to our next speaker, Richard Romney, Director of Mergers for the UK's Competition and Markets Authority. And I guess the question on my mind is are we going to see much of a very different perspective on some or all of these matters? Richard?
Thank you very much. So as you point out, a lot of these issues are global in nature, and hence there's a lot of scope for international cooperation and sharing of ideas and experience. So we're very grateful to the JFTC and the Mergers Working Group co-chairs for bringing us together today to be able to discuss this topic. So today I'm going to focus on two recent contributions from the UK. The first is the report of the Digital Competition Expert Panel that was chaired by Professor Jason Furman on unlocking digital competition. And then secondly, the report by economic consultancy Lear on ex-post assessment of merger control decisions in digital markets. So I'll set out some key reflections on those reports, and I'll also touch on the CMA's recent experience assessing digital mergers. I'll then finish by outlining our plans for updating our guidance. Next slide, please. So a number of recent studies and inquiries from around the world have considered the topic of competition in digital markets. Mark and Eleonora just mentioned the Commission Special Advisors report. Later, Morag's going to cover the ACCC's Digital Platforms Inquiry. And there have also been reviews in France, Germany, Israel, and Japan, amongst others. So in the UK, as I mentioned, we've got the two papers, the Furman Review, which was commissioned by the UK government to make recommendations on changes to competition policy to help to unlock opportunities of the digital economy. And that report was published in March of this year. And then separately, the CMA commissioned external economic consultancy Lear to carry out an ex-post evaluation of past merger decisions of our predecessor organizations, the Office of Fair Trading and the Competition Commission. And that report was published in May this year. So taking a quick look at each of those in turn. Next slide. So first, the Furman Review. The scope of the Furman Review was broader than just digital mergers. It also covered antitrust enforcement and regulation. But one of the key areas for examination was appropriate approaches to mergers and takeovers in digital markets. The panel collected written evidence submitted by over 60 experts and stakeholders. It also hosted 11 roundtables and engaged in further consultations with businesses, economists, lawyers, and UK and international government departments and agencies. The review led to 6 strategic recommendations and 20 recommended actions. And before I move on to the merger-specific findings, I just wanted to highlight 3 of the overarching recommendations. So first of all, the panel recommended the creation of a digital markets unit that would be tasked with securing competition, innovation, and beneficial outcomes for consumers and businesses. And the UK government has signaled its support for this proposal. Second, the panel recommended that the CMA conduct a market study of the digital advertising market, and that was also supported by government, and the CMA launched its market study of online platforms and digital advertising in July this year. And then third, the panel recommended international engagement and cross-border cooperation between authorities in sharing best practice and developing a common approach. And our work through the ICN is a key plank of this engagement. Next slide, please. So just while we're waiting for the slide, I'll move on now to discuss some of the key findings on digital mergers. The review noted, as have a number of the expert reports from around the world, the possibility of under-enforcement of digital mergers. And they observed that there haven't been any false positives among the 400-plus acquisitions by the five largest digital firms in the last 10 years, simply because none of these mergers have been blocked. The panel also noted that digital mergers may give rise to various concerns aside from the standard horizontal issues. So, for example, the acquisition by large digital companies of smaller innovative businesses in adjacent markets as a so-called killer acquisition strategy designed to eliminate potential future rivals. The panel also noted the risk of the loss of potential competition and innovation more broadly. And they drew attention to the challenges that might arise when assessing the development of potential competition in the counterfactual due to the inherent uncertainty of this exercise. And finally, the panel noted that digital mergers may give rise to vertical or conglomerate effects. Next slide, please. So the panel made three key recommendations in relation to digital mergers. First, that the CMA should select more digital markets cases for examination. Second, that the CMA should update its substantive merger assessment guidelines, and the panel made some specific suggestions for changes. And then third, the CMA should have the ability to address concerns where a merger has a low probability of resulting in a high degree of harm. And the mechanism that they propose to achieve this is the introduction of a new so-called balance of harms test. The first of those two recommendations can be taken forward under the CMA's existing framework, but the last one, the balance of harms proposal, would require legislative change. Next slide, please. So now turning to the Lear report. Last year, the CMA commissioned an independent study aimed at evaluating past merger decisions in the digital sector. And the objectives of that study were threefold. First, to review the theories of harm that are typically pursued by competition authorities in relation to these types of merger. Second, to consider whether the authorities' decisions were reasonable based on the evidence available at the time. And third, to consider with the benefit of hindsight whether these mergers might have led to a detrimental outcome. And some of the cases reviewed are up on the slide. They include Facebook, Instagram, Google Waze, and Expedia Trivago. Next slide, please. Looking at the key findings of the report, Lear observed that certain companies active in digital markets are remarkably active in M&A activity. And they analyzed the publicly disclosed acquisitions carried out by Amazon, Facebook, and Google between 2008 and 2018. And over that period, they observed that Google had acquired 168 companies, Facebook 71, and Amazon 60. These acquisitions spanned a wide range of economic sectors, and the targets' products and services were often complementary to those supplied by the acquirers. Horizontal transactions were in the minority. Lear also observed that the targets were 4 years old or younger in nearly 60% of cases, with implications for the assessment of their future potential. Lear also found that in certain cases there were gaps in the analysis that had been undertaken by the authorities. In particular, certain theories of harm hadn't been considered, For example, the authorities in some cases had only focused on one side of two-sided markets, or they may have omitted to consider vertical or conglomerate effects. And equally, the authorities may not have fully explored the available evidence. Now, whilst Lear identified those gaps, they were clear that this didn't undermine the legitimacy of the past decisions. However, their findings are clearly helpful in developing our approach to the assessment of digital mergers going forwards. Next slide, please. So Lear made a number of recommendations on the back of its findings. First, they recommended developing our approach to the assessment of merger counterfactuals, and that might involve accepting more uncertainty in the evaluation of the counterfactual. And they also recommended extending the time frame for the assessment beyond 2 years in appropriate cases. They also recommended that we gather a richer set of information from the merging parties in order to enable the proper investigation of the theories of harm. So that might involve probing the transaction value and rationale, and from a process perspective, it would mean making full use of our information gathering powers. Lear also recommended that we gain a better understanding of the parties' monetization strategies, particularly in two-sided markets. Next slide, please. So where does that leave us in terms of our approach to digital mergers in the UK? Well, the CMA's view is that existing merger control tools are generally fit for purpose, and many of the changes recommended in the recent reports do not require legislative change. For example, we can ensure that we're exploring all the relevant theories of harm and we're collecting appropriate evidence to assess those. We can also take into account the dynamic nature of markets, and we can take account of longer time frames from the counterfactual assessment where appropriate. Although we consider our existing toolkit to be generally fit for purpose, this is something that we're keeping under review, and we will consider if there are areas where improvements can be made. Next slide, please. So evidence of the general effectiveness of the current regime can be found in our recent casework. We've been developing our approach to merger assessment for some time, even before the publication of the recent expert reports. So we've been increasingly active in scrutinizing mergers in digital markets, and we've been considering a wide range of potential issues, including dynamic counterfactuals and loss of competition or innovation. Just to highlight a few recent examples of this approach. So up on the slide, we've got PayPal iZettle was cleared in June this year following a phase two investigation. That merger concerned the supply of offline payments through mobile point of sale services. And the CMA assessed the impact of the merger against a dynamic counterfactual in which PayPal would have become a stronger competitor absent the merger. Then secondly, Experian ClearScore. This merger was abandoned following the CMA's phase two provisional findings in November 2018. That proposed merger concerned the supply of credit comparison platforms and credit checking tools. And the CMA was concerned that the merger would substantially reduce the party's incentives to invest in certain product developments, thereby reducing the rate of innovation in the market. Then Top Cashback Quidco was also abandoned following the CMA's referral of the merger to phase two in February this year. The parties are two of the largest cashback websites in the UK, and these websites are two-sided as they facilitate transactions between merchants and consumers. And the CMA, in that case, considered the impact of the merger on both sides of the market. And then finally, in ebaymotors.co.uk, that was cleared by the CMA at phase one in February this year. Both parties were active in the supply of online classified vehicle advertising services in the UK. And the CMA again considered whether a more competitive counterfactual was appropriate based on the expected investment by eBay. However, it ultimately concluded that such investment did not support a more competitive counterfactual than the status quo. Next slide, please. So aside from its ongoing casework involving digital markets, the CMA is also working to update its merger assessment guidelines to ensure that they reflect current practice and the developments over the last decade. The guidelines were last revised in 2010, and digital markets have grown and evolved significantly since that time. We've already conducted a public call for information, seeking views on various aspects of our digital merger assessments, and our questions covered a range of issues, including market features that are likely to be relevant to the assessment of mergers in digital markets. So, for example, multi-sided platforms, monetization mechanisms, payments through non-monetary means, so, for example, the provision of personal data, the relevance of data assets and network effects. We also asked about certain theories of harm, such as loss of potential competition, loss of innovation, and vertical and conglomerate effects. And our questions also covered non-price parameters of competition and the assessment of the counterfactual. The consultation received responses from a wide range of stakeholders, which expressed some very helpful ideas. So, for example, just to give a couple of examples, there were some helpful suggestions around how we might incorporate privacy as part of the QRS assessment, and also how we might broaden the range of evidence to ensure that our interventions are robust. We're currently reflecting on these submissions, and we will be consulting more widely on possible changes to the guidance with a focus on receiving views from a wide range of stakeholders. So that concludes my presentation. So I think we are saving questions for the end, so I'll hand back now.
Thank you, Richard. That was very interesting. Let me turn now to our fourth and final speaker for her comments, Marag Bond, as the Joint General Manager of the Digital Platforms Branch of the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission. Marag?
Great. Thank you very much, Professor Malamud, and thank you very much for being asked to participate in this call. As Richard noted, the different jurisdictions have taken a different approach to looking at these issues. In Australia's case, the government's approach was to direct the ACCC, which is a competition and consumer agency, to look at particular factors and to carry out an in-depth 18-month inquiry. And that is what I'd like to talk to you about today. I won't cover all the slides. I will very much stick to time, but I'll just give a quick run through of what I am hoping to cover. Firstly, I think it will be helpful if I run through a background to this inquiry, given it covered quite a broad range of issues. Then I want to cover off the key findings of our inquiry. In looking at the key findings, there will be, and I apologise for this up front, there will be a very brief sort of outline of some of the other issues we looked at that go beyond sort of merger control and competition law. I think that's important to provide a bit of context. Then I will talk about the key recommendations that came out of those findings. Then I will talk about, focus a bit more on the merger's perspective. And I do just want to mention international engagement, particularly given this is a call that's sort of been carried out under ICN Mergers Working Group, and we do believe this is an important forum for ongoing cooperation. Next slide, please. Thank you. So the ACCC was given a direction by the Australian government in early December 2017. That direction asked us to look at three categories of digital platforms, and they were search engines, social media, and other digital content aggregation platforms. And we're asked to look at the impact of these platforms on the state of competition in media and advertising markets. And we're asked to have a particular focus to the impact of these platforms on the supply of news and journalism. And we're asked to look at this, the implications of this, the three sets of stakeholders, media content creators, advertisers and consumers. And the reason why I want to highlight that the focus of that terms of reference, is that helps explain why we had a particular focus on the media issues, which is not, I guess, core business for a competition or consumer agency. But there was a real concern in Australia that digital platforms had impacted both perhaps the viability of media businesses to continue to fund news and journalism, and they're also impacting how consumers consume news and journalism. And even though this was not a core function of the ACCC, we worked very closely with our media sort of content regulator and other government departments to help assist our analysis in this area. Next slide, please. So there were four broad questions that the ACCC looked at as part of our inquiry, and it's really probably the first one that is most relevant to the call today. We looked at whether or not digital platforms were exercising substantial market power. So we were looking not so much whether there was a monopolisation or abuse of dominance, but we were looking at whether or not there was an indication that in any of the markets in which they were active, there were perhaps terms and conditions or business or consumer relationships which you may not get in a competitive market. So quite a broad sort of ranging question. We were also looking at whether or not consumers were adequately informed about the amount of data that was being collected and whether they were able to exercise control over how their data was being collected, shared or used. We also looked at whether or not there was regulatory parity between digital platforms and traditional media businesses, basically whether or not there was a sort of an uneven playing field and the competitive implications of that uneven playing field. And then finally, we were very focused on whether or not the platforms had impacted the production and consumption of news and journalism. So this inquiry was an 18-month inquiry. The ACCC had compulsory information gathering powers, and we issued approximately 60 notices to a range of stakeholders. And we had a large number of meetings and discussions with both digital platforms and other stakeholders. And we also hosted a number of forums where we had people from, I guess, opposing sides and other industry stakeholders present their views. We also commissioned a range of research and surveys. Next slide, please. Great, thank you. So I'm going to highlight here the key competition findings of our report. And I've indicated on this slide that a lot of the focus was on Google and Facebook. And this was because, as regards our submissions process, nearly all of the submissions concerned the market power of Google and Facebook. When you looked at how Australians use the internet and use apps, the amount of time they spend on Google and also Facebook dwarfs the amount of time spent on other platforms. And also given the focus on social media search engines and digital content aggregators, which was the scope of our terms of reference, these were clearly the leading businesses in that area. So I just wanted to explain upfront why we had specific conclusions in relation to those businesses. So we found that Google had substantial market power in the supply of general search and search advertising. So that's two sides of the same. Obviously a two-sided market, and one was consumer-facing and one was advertising-facing. And we also found that Facebook had substantial market power in the supply of social media and on the other side of that market in display advertising, which is obviously a broader category than just social media advertising. We focused very much on those markets, as that was a focus of the terms of reference. But there may well be other markets, and there probably is other markets, where these platforms may have market power. And there's obviously been findings in a number of other countries about, in particular, Google's market power in different markets. Now, coming off that substantial degree of market power, which is the Australian equivalent to a dominance test, we did identify concerns that Facebook had that ability and the incentive to favour their own related businesses or the businesses of their business partners. And this clearly goes to issues like self-preferencing in search or promoting various sort of related content potentially in a newsfeed. That conclusion obviously derived in part from a finding of substantial market power, but there were other issues that we thought were relevant here, including, for example, the opacity of some of this decision-making, which makes those sort of vertical theories of harm, we think, more credible. And we're also concerned, based on overseas case law, and also sort of the critical function that some of these businesses provide in terms of their gateway to how consumers access information or how advertisers reach Australian consumers. We identified a number of factors that we thought contributed to that substantial market power. There were two I've highlighted there. One, the role of strategic acquisitions, which Richard covered in his presentation, and also the role of data in terms of creating higher barriers to entry, entrenching network effects, and also enabling sort of that the ability to sort of use the data and leverage into related markets. We've also identified particular concerns with what we're referring to as the ad tech supply chain, and that's the sort of the series of options to help deliver programmatic advertising. We're concerned with the opacity of those markets, and we're concerned as to whether or not they're working as efficiently and as effectively as they can. We're also concerned about the extent to which there may be some self-preferencing in the operation of those markets. Next slide, please. I've just covered broadly here some findings in relation to other parts of our report. I think I will just actually skip over those. They're not as relevant to the audience on this call. Next slide, please. I've set down there the major recommendations from our final report that go to really those core issues of competition and market power. But what I do want to highlight is, even though we've got, we've suggested two, I guess, sort of legal changes in terms of merger notification and merger assessment in Australia, we, I guess, reached in some ways a very similar conclusion to Furman in the Furman report, which Richard spoke about, and that we didn't think there needed to be a wholesale rewrite of Australian competition law. And in fact, we didn't actually propose any significant changes to Australian competition law. We thought that the existing toolkit in terms of abuse of dominance or misuse of market power was sufficient to be able to capture the conduct we were concerned about. We did, however, recommend significant changes in relation to consumer law, in particular the introduction of an unfair practices prohibition. And we did also recommend a number of quite significant policy proposals. But in terms of competition law, in some ways our amendments were a lot more confined. So I will go through those now. The first one I've highlighted there is that we do think there needs to be additional merger factors that should be considered in relation to a merger assessment. Secondly, we do think that certain businesses, in particular designated digital platforms, should be required to enter into a merger notification protocol with the ACCC. And that's the background to that is that Australia is one of the few countries remaining, I guess, that still has a voluntary merger notification framework. And we do think in particular markets there would be a benefit to having an upfront notification and sufficient time for the ACCC as the agency to overview and consider those transactions. The other competition-related investigations, which may be of relevance, is we did recommend that Google introduce a choice screen for Android users, very similar to the choice screen which Google is rolling out in Europe, which Google has described as very positive from a consumer perspective and is a response to the European Commission's decision, Android decision from last year. We've also recommended a greater scrutiny and monitoring of digital platform markets. One of the key issues we found is not only were these markets critical to the operation of the economy, we found that they were very opaque, and we were concerned that there was significant competition and consumer law issues that were potentially not being uncovered. So what we have proposed is proactive investigation and monitoring of those markets. and we've recommended that a branch of the ACCC be created to carry out that role. One of the other issues that we looked at, data portability, we do think that that should be looked at in the context of digital platform markets, but we don't think that that is something that can be easily done. There are a number of significant challenges, which we've highlighted in our report, and we think that that is something that should be looked at in the future. Next slide, please. Can you skip to the next slide as well? Thank you. Sorry, next slide. I'll skip over that one. Thank you. Great. So I just want to focus here on the merger recommendations. So at the moment, the Australian legislation has a range of merger factors that the ACCC and the courts and the tribunal should take into account when considering whether or not an acquisition has the effect or likely effect of substantially lessening competition. And what we've effectively suggested is that these factors should be updated. The first one is that there should be consideration of the likelihood that an acquisition would result in the removal from the market of a potential competitor. Secondly, that the nature and significance of assets, including data and technology being acquired directly or through the body corporate, should also be taken into account. There is no change at all to the overall merger test, which remains a substantial lessening of competition test. We do think, though, that these factors are likely to be important to an increasing number of cases, particularly the reference to data, given the significance of the growth of the data economy in Australia and no doubt elsewhere. The ACCC was potentially able to take into account these factors regardless of any legislative change, but the ACCC is not the ultimate decision maker in merger cases in Australia. If we think there is a risk that a transaction has the effect or likely effect of substantially lessening competition, we do have to establish that in court. And there is also a tribunal involved in the case of certain decisions. So what we really want to do with those factors is signal not only to stakeholders, so merger parties and other interested parties, but also to the tribunals and the Australian courts, that these factors should be taken into account in the relevant cases. Next slide, please. The second key recommendation was an advance notice of acquisitions. And this is where we're recommending that large digital platforms agree to effectively a merger notification protocol with the ACCC. The details of that notification protocol will depend on what's negotiated. But what we really wanted to ensure was that the ACCC was given advance notice of transactions which meet certain thresholds. And those thresholds would obviously relate to whether or not the target was carrying on business in Australia, and that the ACCC is given sufficient time to be able to review those transactions. As I indicated earlier, we're one of the few jurisdictions without compulsory merger notification, and we do think it is important in these cases that the ACCC is given an opportunity to review these critical transactions. This voluntary notification protocol is something that the ACCC has done in the past. We do it from time to time, I think, when there are particular sectors where we think there are significant competition concerns and where we are concerned that perhaps we may not get enough information up front or may not have sufficient time to consider a transaction. We did not identify in the report who those large digital platforms would be, but given our conclusions on substantial market power, I expect it to be pretty obvious as to who that recommendation is likely to be targeted at. But what we do see is that going down the line, should other businesses in the sector be found to have a substantial degree of market power, then they would be expected to enter into a similar notification protocol. Next slide. Thank you. The other thing I just wanted to highlight here is international engagement was a critical part of our inquiry. We spoke to I've said 15 plus agencies. I actually think it was a lot more than that. I was struggling just to remember all the names. And that was really critical to our findings and recommendations. We did closely consider both of the reports that have been mentioned today. And regarding the Thurman report that Richard mentioned, that introduction of the balance of harms approach, that was something the ACCC did consider in some detail. But the law in Australia, we thought, was sufficient to allow us to take into account scenarios where perhaps there was a relatively low probability of a counterfactual occurring. We have a real chance threshold, and we did think that the law was sufficiently flexible to us to take into account those scenarios. So while we did consider that recommendation that came out of Thurman, I think we probably reached a similar view to the CMA. And similarly, we focused and were very interested in the panel of experts' competition policy for the digital era, the European report as well. Next slide, thanks. I just wanted to highlight, so the ACCC has made a number of policy recommendations, including those merger ones which I mentioned, but also a further 21. There were 23 recommendations in total. The Australian government are considering those recommendations, and we understand that there will be a decision by the end of the year. So our law may change, but it's not guaranteed to change. The ACCC has gone ahead and created a digital platforms branch, and we're hoping to continue to engage with competition authorities and consumer authorities around the world as regards these issues. And obviously ICN and other organisations are a great facilitator. Great potential for us to facilitate ideas going forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Murag. Very interesting. Let's move to questions now. And I want to start by first inviting the speakers, if any of them wants to comment on anything any of the other speakers said. Okay, I'll take that silence as a no. So let me ask this question, which is really addressed to all of the speakers, but so we don't go always in the same sequence. We'll do the reverse order, and I'll address it in the first instance to Murag. The question is this. All three of of your jurisdictions have recently commissioned expert reports that in one way or another recommend that merger enforcement be more aggressive. The EC report recommends reversing the burden of proof and requiring the merging parties to justify the mergers in some cases. The UK report wants more aggressive enforcement against mergers that could be detrimental to competition, which is surely an imprecise standard. And the Australia report says that merger review should include assessment of the likelihood that the merger will result in the removal from the market of a potential competitor. Here's my question to each of you. Let me start with Murag, as I said. Conceptually speaking, not with naming parties, what kinds of digital mergers do you think will be blocked or subject to undertakings in the future that would not have been so constrained in the past?
Thank you. Look, just as regards our recommendations, it's for both the data recommendation and also the reference to the removal from the market of a potential competitor. We don't necessarily see those as just digital issues. We think that the removal from the market of a potential competitor could be relevant in other cases, in pharmaceutical markets. When you've got sort of new entry drugs, so that's an area where those concerns also often arise. So just, you know, we're not just sort of limiting. If those merger factors come into our law, they will apply to a range of different merger and acquisitions, not just in the digital sector. What I do think, though, is that there will be closer scrutiny in a couple of scenarios, and one of them, I think, is sort of this vertical conglomerate issue. Is I think sometimes in the past, it was often very difficult to see how these markets all link together. And I do feel, and this was really a lesson for the ACCC through the inquiry, is that we really felt that we laboured under a sort of a real information asymmetry. The platforms had all this information, and it was very difficult for us to play catch up. That's something I think all competition authorities face, particularly in merger type scenarios when we're looking at mergers. And what I do think, though, is as a result of these reports, I would like to think that we have improved our sort of understanding of some of these markets, and we can see the linkages between the different markets. Sometimes it's very much a vertical or a conglomerate issue, or sometimes it might just be the role of data and just sort of understanding, okay, you're saying the data's been collected in this way, but perhaps it could be used in this way, or the way it can be combined. So I do think of anything, of any transactions where you are increasing perhaps the range of data points, particularly obviously high quality data points, will be something that will be very, very closely looked at by the ACCC and also I expect by other competition authorities. I also expect we're more likely to look perhaps at vertical conglomerate type theories. I think going forward, I do think in those cases perhaps traditionally merger authorities have been maybe a little bit more relaxed about those cases given the efficiencies, but I do think because of that history of strategic acquisition, you know, we'll be much more focused on whether or not there is potential foreclosure in related markets.
Interesting. Okay. Richard, how would you answer that question? What kinds of digital mergers do you think will be blocked or subject to undertakings that would not have been so constrained in the past?
Thank you. So, as I mentioned, the CMA has been scrutinising mergers in digital markets for a number of years and will continue to do so. And where those mergers give rise to a substantial lessening of competition, then they may well be blocked or subject to remedies. And as our understanding of digital markets has evolved, we've perhaps become a bit more sophisticated in our analysis. So, as I set out in the presentation, we might take account of more dynamic counterfactuals. We're likely to look at a range of potential theories of harm, including the ones that we've been discussing around loss of potential competition, loss of innovation, vertical and conglomerate concerns. And as Morag mentioned, we'll be using our tools to full effect to make sure that we can get hold of the relevant information in order to properly scrutinize these mergers. So we have compulsory information gathering powers under Section 109 of the Enterprise Act, and we'll make full use of those to make sure that we have the right information to properly scrutinize these types of merger. The other thing I would mention is in terms of our ability to scrutinize digital mergers is the creation of our data team internally. So we've got around 15 people who are specialist data scientists, and we can draw on their expertise when we are conducting our merger assessments. But as a general point, I think it's probably worth clarifying that we're certainly not looking to block mergers in any particular market. Again, as Morag mentioned, many of these concerns may also arise in non-digital markets. So innovation concerns in particular might arise in pharma markets or agrochemical markets, etc. In all cases, the key is that we are subjecting these mergers to proper scrutiny on the basis of appropriate evidence.
Okay, thanks, Richard. Eleanor and Mark, how would you answer that question?
Thank you, Douglas. From our end, I think maybe just to reply to your first part where you state that the report encourages stricter merger enforcement. There, I would just like to underline, as I stated, that the report is a report by three independent experts,
and that therefore the report only expresses the views of these experts and not the view of DG Comp as such. Therefore, we certainly take note and great interest in the recommendation of these experts, but do not necessarily will not necessarily implement these one-to-one. So it shows that we are very mindful of these issues and are looking how best to address them, and are certainly continuing this process of reviewing our practice so far. Now, with regard to the cases that might be blocked, ultimately, I think it is very important to review each case on its own merits, and that therefore it is very, very difficult to predict where we will be stricter. As outlined in our presentation today, the way we look at data has evolved. We have used the cases we had, and in particular, I think the Apple Shazam case is the latest example where you can see a development in how we look into data issues. So I wouldn't want to exclude that this framework for assessing these issues might lead to enforcement in cases where under our previous less developed framework maybe certain issues might not have come up. So I would therefore certainly flag as potential cases of data aggregations. And maybe another area is the one as outlined in the description of the report of the special advisors, the one of dominant platforms that are acquiring small companies in neighboring market. As I said, the recommendations in the report might not reflect or state the actual position of DG Comp, but we certainly share the view that these cases might be problematic, and we'll think about how best to address them under our current framework.
That's interesting. Let me follow up, actually, if I can, with Eleanor and Mark in this question. You've talked in the last answer and in the presentation a lot about big data and concerns that big data or aggregation of data could increase market power and entry barriers. And I think you've acknowledged, a little bit at least, that aggregation of data can actually improve products. In fact, I think Eleanor in her presentation said specifically that products can improve a lot and that, of course, can increase market power. My question is, what do you do with the argument that the aggregation of data by a merger enables the merged party to serve its users, its customers, its advertisers, whichever constituency, whichever side of the market you're focusing on, enables to serve them better, and that therefore that should be regarded as an efficiency defense, not as a competition problem?
Thank you for this question. I will start off by saying, of course, in our system, as in others, there is a specific framework for the analysis of efficiencies. And whilst at times parties have come forward with this type of argument that aggregation could bring, let's say, some benefits, we actually haven't received so far an efficiency defense based on these type of claims, so which would satisfy in our framework the three criterion for a efficiency claim to be accepted, which is the fact that it's verifiable, that is merger specific, and that it will be indeed the pass on to consumers. That being said, in fact, we have considered though this type of situation in our competition analysis, so in the competitive assessment, and this is not something that we have done very recently, but even like in the past, like for example in Microsoft Yahoo, when we assessed the impact of the transaction, we also considered the potential pro-competitive effect of the merger, in particular to the extent that by increasing the size of Microsoft activities in search could have created a stronger competitor to Google. The same in TomTom TeleAtlas, where we effectively assessed like the fact that the combination of the parties' databases could bring new maps faster. Whilst this was not presented as an efficiency claim, the parties were not able to quantify it, etc., we have taken into consideration this as one element on basis of which we cleared. And in the same Microsoft LinkedIn, when we analyzed another market I've not talked about, which was the market for customer relationship management software, there, in fact, we received some complaints related to the fact that by using data acquired by LinkedIn, the product offering in customer relationship management software of Microsoft could have become better. And so, let's say, and also competitors could have been marginalized. In fact, there we acknowledge specifically that if that were to be the case, considering that the data of LinkedIn were so far not used for any other purpose in this respect, it would have been actually pro-competitive. So we do not shy away from considering this in our competitive analysis we assessed. The fact we haven't looked at this specifically as an efficiency so far has been the fact that the party themselves have not done so. And this is also tells you at times, I mean, it's important to do all the analysis, but probably, yeah, like there could be also harm related to that. And then when you weigh them out, it could be that the net effect could be negative.
Okay, that's interesting. Obviously, if data can enhance market power, it must be because it's a valuable competitive asset and it has potential to enhance product quality as well, but I guess those two aren't necessarily symmetric. Let me ask Richard a question on a different point suggested by his presentation. Richard, you noticed that the Furman report determined that there had been no false positives in past merger enforcement and that there might have been false negatives. How did they determine that? I mean, more generally, how do you know whether a prohibited merger would actually have injured competition if it had been consummated, or that a merger that was permitted to close actually did injure competition?
So, thanks. So here, a false positive is obviously where you prohibit a merger that should have been cleared, and a false negative is where you approve a merger that should have been prohibited. And the Furman report, as I mentioned, it observed that over the last 10 years, the five largest digital firms, so Google, Apple, Facebook, Amazon, and Microsoft, have made over 400 acquisitions globally, none of which have been blocked, and very few of which have been scrutinized by competition authorities, either in the UK or elsewhere. So in those circumstances, I think we can pretty safely say that there haven't been any false positives. The interesting question is whether there have been any false negatives, so clearances or letting them go under the radar when they should have been prohibited. And that's a question that Leah looked into specifically for the CMA. Now, it's obviously very difficult to assess retrospectively what might have happened in the absence of a merger that's been allowed to proceed. And as a result, Leah didn't conclude that any of the cases examined by the CMA's predecessor organization, so the OFT and the Competition Commission, had been wrongly cleared. But what they did identify, and this is what I picked up in the presentation, is that certain theories of harm hadn't been looked at and certain evidence hadn't been fully assessed. Now, in those circumstances, that clearly presents a risk of false negatives. So our assessment of digital mergers has evolved over the last decade, and it had evolved even before these expert reports. And we now consider a broad range of theories of harm and appropriate evidence when assessing these mergers to ensure that they are subject to appropriate scrutiny, and we minimize the risk of false negatives.
Okay. Let me ask a question that was I received from one of our listener participants in my email. And the question basically is this. Each of you has talked about your approaches to some of these very difficult new competition questions and the recommendations of your advisory committees, all of which suggest substantial discretion in the reviewing authorities. But, you know, we see that when you talk about reversing the burden of proof or using qualitative factors to assess market power or assessing big data and so forth. And the question is, if that kind of discretion is going to be used to resolve difficult merger questions for which there is not a precise quantitative data, should there be any prosecutorial, any guardrails, as it were, any safeguards to guard against sort of prosecutorial arbitrariness, a defense lawyer, and I think it was a defense lawyer who sent me the question, might ask. Or maybe put it in a more descriptive way, what are the agencies doing to guard against sort of arbitrary assessment of some of these qualitative factors? I don't want to maybe put any of you on the spot, but maybe since we haven't heard from Marag for a couple of minutes, let me start with her if you have anything you want to say about that question.
Sure, thank you. Look, I do appreciate perhaps what we're proposing in Australia, you know, does involve something new that at least we haven't had before to our list of merger factors. But I don't think that the uncertainty perhaps associated with these new terms is any different perhaps to the uncertainty associated with other terms. For example, our merger factors at the moment, you know, refer to levels of concentration, refers to barriers to entry, refers to the role of imports. They're sort of a qualitative description of an issue. There isn't always a lot of numerical sort of analysis that is capable of being done. At the end of the day, it does come down to a judgment call. What I would also point out is, you know, we would like to sort of engage in perhaps in that quantitative assessment, similar to the CMA. We have a strategic data unit that is focused on a range of sort of areas, but one of them is very much sort of the assisting the investigations team with that quantitative analysis. The second point will just be, we have to establish our cases in court, and we have to establish our cases in court to the burden of a substantial lessening of competition. So while we've introduced these, while we're proposing that these new factors be introduced, there is no change to the overall threshold. I don't think there is any really greater risk to the to merger parties or anything beyond which would exist currently.
Okay, how about Eleanor and Mark, maybe with a EU perspective on this?
Yes, I'm happy to give it. Thank you. First of all, I think it is important to note that the whole process the DG Comp is doing with the special advisors, the publication of the report, is to spark a public debate in order to avoid having to take a decision on its own without having the benefit of many points of views on how best to tackle these issues. So, first of all, I think that the public discussion, the discussions in international fora, like the present one, is a very important element in coming to a good, reasonable way how to deal with these issues. Second of all, I think ultimately the answer will be the same as the one Morag has just given. Ultimately, in the European Union as well, the courts will have the final say on whether any approach taken by us will be in line with the current framework. So, but before we get there, there are also several internal and external safeguards. So the European Commission, before it takes a decision, has a long internal consultation process. It has an consultation process with its member states via the advisory committee. So there are many, many steps that ensure that whatever decision is taken is a decision that is well argued and well reasoned. And as I said, ultimately the final call will have to be made by the European courts.
A wise reminder about the role of the courts in this process. Richard, we've already exceeded our time by a couple of minutes. Any final comments about this question or anything else before we close out the teleseminar?
No, so I mean, just to reiterate really the points that have already been made. So we typically would be assessing both quantitative and qualitative evidence when we're reviewing a merger, and we would weigh that in the round and conduct an objective assessment of that. There are a number of procedural safeguards in place, so we allow representations from the parties and their advisors throughout the process, and there is also we're operating within a legal framework, and there is the additional safeguard of the possibility of appeals to the Competition Appeal Tribunal. So all of that taken together means that there are a number of safeguards in place to protect the parties' rights of defense.
Okay, thank you. I think we are out of time. I want to thank all the speakers for some very interesting and in some ways significantly diverse presentations. And I want to thank all of you participants for giving us your attention and in some instances sending questions to me. I'm sorry I wasn't able to ask all of them. I think that concludes the teleseminar.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That does conclude your conference. You may now disconnect.